Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hi, I'm Mari Forth.
And I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land. I'm still dealing with some vocal issues, so please bear with me.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. We'd love it if you would subscribe to our feed. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays, as well as helping to keep this program going.
If you've already subscribed, thank you. It makes a big difference. As we're recording this, we are minutes away from the sentencing of Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos. We will be refreshing our feeds throughout this recording, and we will give you the news, which by the time you're listening to this will be old news, but it's exciting for us. Mari, I also have an update on the Gabby Petito case. A final judgment of $3 million has been reached in Gabby's parents' lawsuit against the estate of Brian Laundrie. Now, he clearly did not have $3 million. It's an arbitrary figure. But whatever money comes in will go to the Gabby Petito Foundation, which provides help, support, and education. Now, this is a separate lawsuit from the action against Roberta and Chris Laundrie, Brian's parents, for intentional infliction of emotional distress, which a Florida judge has ruled can go ahead, and we will see the answer to that later in this year. Mari, what did we watch this week?
Let's open today's file. We watched I Am Vanessa Guillen on Netflix, produced and directed by Christy Wegner. To discuss this documentary, we called on the co-host of the Staircase Recap over on Post Show Recaps. Living life at 1.75 times speed and rolling the dice, it's Marissa Garza. Marissa,
hey. How are you? I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. And is it a mysterious dog with an annoyingly strong sense of smell? No, it's Ariel F. Marissa and Ariel, welcome to the scene.
Welcome.
I'm so excited to be here, and I'm trying to pay attention and be present, but I am waiting for this Elizabeth Holmes news as well. What a crazy time in the true crime world right now.
Yes, yes. We are monitoring our phones, but we will bring you this document, this current documentary. So it's the first time for both of you guys here on the crime scene, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we got to start with our question, right? So let's start with Marissa. What is your true crime origin story? What draws you to true crime?
Well, I come from a crime family. No, I'm just kidding.
A family of crime? Okay. A family who commits crime?
Well, growing up, like, my dad is like really into crime, of true or fictionalized crime of any type. So I grew up with like Murder, She Wrote, and then like the chalk outlines, and like trying to figure out like stories that way. And like pretending I was the chalk outline, like on the floor. Oh, wow. And like, which would be the most interesting way to go? Like, this was like, this is me as a kid.
I love it.
But then also, like, 2020 was always on the TV. Dateline was always on the TV, all of those things. So I have grown up, you know, solving all of the mysteries that I possibly could. Also, you know, there were kid detective things like Ghost Rider. Anybody remembers Ghost Rider?
My heart just left.
Yeah. I remember Ghost Rider.
So I have always, I know this is being recorded, but I've always been around crime, I guess. crime storytelling in one way or another. And so when you asked me to be on the show, I was like, I can put these skills to the test. See where I'm at.
Do you have a particular genre that you like? Are you into serial killers, cults, white collar crimes?
I have a soft spot in my heart for cults and white collar crime, mainly because they're so weird. Sometimes murders can be a bit too much for me, just because it's like, you know, they can be super dark. But like white collar crimes, I'm like, you think you're getting away with this? You totally think you could do this? Hence the, you know, the dropout of it all. And then, with cults, it's just like, how many people are you going to get involved in this before it goes, before it hits the fan? So those are things I try, I tend to keep up with, but I'm always, you know, got my ear on something.
Interesting. Ariel, how about you? What's your true crime origin story?
Now I'm thinking about Ghost Rider. That was what a terrible time. There was like a very specific period of time as a kid where like Ghost Rider was everything. Before any of us really knew it as true crime, I remember watching, you know, episodes of 2020 on Fridays. Mm-hmm. And that was more like, you know, catch all news stories, a little bit more of like a news magazine. But a lot of those were true crime. And I think, you know, I was definitely interested in those. But these days, and, you know, and then I guess more recently getting caught up in the Serial season one of it all and becoming, you know, kind of obsessed with that, along with a lot of people in the world. And now it's a whole thing, and it's their entire channel is devoted to it. And similar to Marissa, some of the murder stuff is a little bit too heavy for me. So I think the more almost esoteric, weird cult stuff, similarly, like, you know, The Vow and all that stuff is fascinating and weird. And some of the white collar stuff, too, you know, it's just. Like it's no less in some way, you know, obviously depending on the crime and who it is, not that there are, you know, in Elizabeth Holmes specifically, not that that was like a victimless crime by any means, just because it wasn't about murder. But I think it feels a little bit more separated and it's a little bit more palatable for me.
The fruitcake fraud of it all.
Yes, exactly. put some lipstick on that.
Yeah, exactly.
I should have worn my black turtleneck.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we would have known.
Yeah.
All right. So this is going to be a heavy episode. Mm-hmm. Slight trigger warning for sexual harassment, talk of sexual violence, sexual assault, especially later on for me and my recommendations. But let's get to the crime. In April 2020, Private First Class Vanessa Guillen was bludgeoned to death by Aaron Robinson on Fort Hood Military Base. She was 20 years old, and Vanessa was missing for 2 months before some of her dismembered and burnt remains were found. On hearing of the finding, Robinson fled Fort Hood and fatally shot himself when law enforcement attempted his capture. Cicely Aguilar, Robinson's girlfriend, was indicted by a grand jury for assisting him in the dismemberment and burial of Vanessa's body. The assault and killing took place at Fort Hood in Texas, which has the highest incident of sexual harassment and assault in the U.S. military. In 2020, 39 soldiers stationed at Fort Hood died or went missing. 13 completed suicide, 5 were murdered, 11 deaths remain unsolved, and Vanity Fair reports that these numbers are not really out of the ordinary for a U.S. military base.
Oh, that's more than an Afghanistan year.
Yeah.
Losses in a war.
That's insane.
Yeah. Fort Hood is a cesspool, to say the least. And I can say that because I come from a military family and I actually checked in with like my dad about some of this, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But before we get into all of that, we like to get our overall thoughts about the property itself. So I'll start with Ariel. Ariel, what were your overall thoughts about this documentary? It was a feature-length documentary, a little bit over an hour and a half. What did you think about it?
You know, obviously it's a horrific story, very sad. I was struck very much by the, you know, my connection being a Latin person and hearing them speak Spanish. I was reminded of my mother and a lot of things that Vanessa's mother says and kind of the way that they perceive the world through religion. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for any family, but especially a family that you kind of see yourself in. I can't even imagine. And as far as the story itself, I thought it was, I didn't really know a lot. I remember hearing about it in the news, but I was watching very, I'm trying to be selective about the word, with a lot of anticipation, because I wasn't sure how, where it was going to go. I didn't remember how it ended. I didn't know if any of the, you know, laws that they were trying to get passed would go through, how it all ended, if they even solved the crime at all. And I thought it was well told. And, you know, at an hour and a half, I cover a lot of movies, and anything over an hour and a half, I'm just like, you're losing me. So I thought, you know, the length is good. And a story like this, unfortunately, at the end of the day, you are making an entertainment product, even though it's a true story. So it is important to keep people engaged if you want to get the message out. So I thought it was very effective.
I completely agree, Marissa.
Yes. For me, I think the focus on the family is what really kept me engaged. And they're similar to Ariel, having a Mexican background. I identified a lot with the family in terms of what they were doing, and how they felt and how they expressed themselves. And also just like the immigrant story was really something that hit home for me, because I talk a lot about this with my dad. Like, what is it like to come to this country, you know, being sold this story? And, you know, and that to me is more, it's not more heartbreaking than murder, but, you know, like Vanessa thought she was going to, she was doing something. And like the pull of being an American was very evident in the story, and really motivated a lot of choices by everyone involved. And so I thought there was like a second commentary that was happening along with the main storyline of, you know, what happened to Vanessa and what her family went through. And I thought I appreciated that. I appreciated being kind of having a little light shone on that, because so many people don't have an understanding of what it's like to be an immigrant in the country. And, you know, to see the pain of this family who's like, we risked everything to come here, and now this is what we get. Like the government's supposed to be helping us. Like, what is this? So that I really identified with. But those sisters, my heart goes out to them and the work that they did and how they used their voice. I found that, despite the context of the story, very inspirational.
Yes. Sarah, how about you?
Well, I liked this documentary very much. It surprised me. It walked a very fine line. It kept the focus on Vanessa while telling a much larger story. So the actual murder itself is quite lightly touched on.
Yes.
It is more so the story of the effect of her disappearance, the disgusting behavior of the military. I'm going to say disgusting. And the fight of the sisters, the family, and then the movement, the swell of the I Am Vanessa Guillen movement, and then going into the trying to get legislation passed. So as a true crime property, it was able to tell the large story, but surprisingly continually have Vanessa at the forefront and have the murder and the murderer almost sidelined. And I really appreciated that about the documentary.
Yes. Thank you for pointing that out, because that's exactly what I was about to say. I went into this documentary knowing everything about this case, having followed the case like from the beginning. Following the case, it was actually a very big story to me, because for a little bit of background, Vanessa goes missing and her story peaks June 2020, like when everybody was at home, when the protests were strong for George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Like, Vanessa was right there for me as well. Like, she was one, her case was actually one of the cases that I followed quite like to the T, mostly because one of my old coworkers, she was actually a Mexican immigrant, and we were like watching the case ourselves. And I was telling her about it, and we were talking about it back and forth. We are both true crime enthusiasts, and we just couldn't believe what was happening. We were following it, and we were actually following it when Robinson ended up, when they ended up releasing Robinson's name, like we were like just on it, like how everybody was about Gabby Petito. This is kind of like what I was following on social media. I was reading the hashtag I am Vanessa Guillen. We were talking about it. She was explaining to me like Mexican culture. She was telling me what the mother was saying at the press conference. So I remember this case so vividly. I had also watched, it'll be like in one of my recommendations, I had watched the 2020 on Vanessa Guillen that they had did like maybe, I think they did two and then they kind of like put it together. But like at like later in the year of her death, and then they updated it like a year later. But I watched that. So I knew about the murder. I knew about everything. This actually covered the stuff that I didn't know about, because me, like other people, when there's a story, there's a case, there's a murder, they found out who did it, the investigation's still ongoing, then you fall off. Like I had no clue about the political side of it. I truly didn't. I feel like I slightly do remember them meeting with Trump. I remember that, but I forgot about the bill part of it. So if you're looking at this documentary for the murder aspect, like Sarah said, you're not going to get it, because the first 20 minutes, like mostly the first 20 minutes focuses on the murder, and basically not even just the murder, but the family's response to the murder, what the family did, because the sister,
Myra.
Yes. Myra was there. Like Vanessa was so loved that one missed text message triggered her whole family to look for her. Like that's the type of love and close knit that family is. Like that's amazing. If my brother doesn't hear from me for months, like I say that jokingly, but like it was so impassioned. Like her sister was at the base like later that night looking for her. Mm-hmm. And it just shows her response in conjunction to the military when they were just dragging their feet, you know? So it shows their response. It talks a little bit, just a smidgen about her murder, but most of it is the family trying to get the I Am Vanessa bill passed, or the act passed, and their journey for advocating for Vanessa and trying to make her death mean something. And I thought that was so inspirational, but so sad. Like the first like half of this documentary, I was just crying at work. Just like,
yeah, same. I even messaged you. I just said sobbing. You know, yeah, it was incredible.
It was. Yeah. So, for me, I too enjoyed the documentary. Again, if you're gonna give me a feature, I never complain about a tight 130, you know. So let's kind of get into a little bit more about the property itself. Like I said, it opens up on the family. It actually mainly opens up on Vanessa's mom, Gloria, talking about Vanessa and how Vanessa was her miracle. This is what got me. It's like just opening up on Gloria, talking about Vanessa, humanizing us, putting us in her family's eyes about how they see Vanessa, really making her a fully functional, like not character, but like, you know, presenting her actual life to us before she's tragically taken away. I thought that was very effective storytelling. What do we think about the family and the family's role in this documentary? I'll start with you, Marissa.
I wrote in my notes, very Mexican family.
Approve.
So just to give an example of what it's like, I can only speak as a half Mexican, but when I'm like, one time I was in the city walking by my grandma's house and she didn't even know I was in the city, and she opens up the blinds and she knew, like she opened up the blind, looked at me and was like, you get in the house. Like she knew I was there. So like there's some sort of mystical weird connection in these families and closeness. I mean, the text thing, my family would send the cops out if they didn't hear from me in like a certain amount of time, or they'd go out there themselves. It's that part was very relatable. I just, you could just hear though in everything that they said, like the pain that is still in their story. I just was grateful that they were that vulnerable to share that with the audience, because I think it really drove home this, you know, they did it for Vanessa. Like everything they do is for Vanessa, but I know like it served well here.
Yeah, good point. Ariel?
Yeah, the family stuff for me definitely is the, you know, the North Star of the emotion and the impact of this movie. Similarly, like I already said, the mother just being herself, frankly, and like Marissa said, expressing her pain so openly was really affecting. The sisters, I'm thinking now of the moment, I think this is when I first started like really crying. You know, it's just the distinction between like, okay, there are tears in my eyes versus like, okay, now I'm openly weeping. When the terrible moment where the sister gets the news, mm-hmm. that I think when maybe the body had been found, mm-hmm. and then she's like, I have to be strong. Like I have to, somebody else says to her like, okay, you can't tell your mother like this. You need to like gather yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anytime a child is asked to be the adult is like, that's getting me like automatically. And then when you add this element of this incredible horror that I can't even, you know, I can't even put myself in that position emotionally. But the fact that even then, like, okay, now I have to be greater than myself. Like I have to try to be superhuman basically in this moment and now deliver this news to my mother. And I know how much it's going to affect her. Like, that was so hard to watch and, you know, in a way, very beautiful. You know, I use that word mm-hmm. kind of oddly there, but just there was something so human and so gentle about it in the face of that horror. It's beautiful. And then to see how young the youngest sister was when it started. And then by the end, she's like 17, 18. It's like, wow, mm-hmm. this is, you've watched a piece of her grow up. It's crazy.
But she's like, yeah, 25, like, right. Yeah. Like at the,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Emotionally, well, she's like 25. Yeah.
One of the great things about the documentary is we have the inspirational sisters and mother, and the sisters are protesting and speaking out and being passionate. So it would be very easy to be carried away by that. And we are carried by it. But there is a moment where Lupe, the younger sister, 15, when Vanessa goes missing, says, I have to stand back. And that was a bit of a breathtaking moment as well. Mm-hmm. And that the documentary put it in and that the family and Lupe herself allowed that to be in. I thought that was incredibly powerful because I think when we see these family members taking up the banner, taking up the cry, taking up the cause, we feel their emotion, but we also kind of put them up on a pedestal of amazing activism.
Right.
And this child was 15 and is now only 17. She wants to be a journalist, which is pretty amazing. But that she stepped back and, I won't say confessed because it's not like a confession, but that she expressed that and that the documentary allowed her time to say it and allowed us time to go, oh, we've been rah-rahing her somewhat. And now, yes, of course, she's a child.
Yeah, she was in 10th grade when Vanessa was murdered. By the end of the documentary here, it actually ends in May this year, May 2022. She has graduated and she is, like Sarah said, planning to become a journalist. And the most of this documentary is like, it's interviews, it's archival footage, because the family, specifically Myra, Lupe, and Mother Gloria, literally were on their ass from the beginning. Like we said, Myra, the moment that Vanessa didn't text her back, and a little bit of the timeline from what we know from the family's point of view, because that's another thing in this documentary. We just had the family's point of view of what happened because the army basically kept everything a secret until their investigation was semi over. So we'll talk about that, but let's talk about from the family. So Myra, she goes, her sister's missing. She drives, I think it's like 4 hours from Houston to Killeen, Texas, where Fort Hood is. At least four. We should have asked one of our two favorite Texans that question. But so she gets there at 3 a.m. The next day, she's like, she's on the base trying to talk to somebody like, where's my sister? Like, we need to find her. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't know where she's at. She might just be out. And they're like, well, except for we have her keys. We have her wallet. We have all of her stuff here, mysteriously where she was last seen. but it doesn't really seem like that's like a big thing. Like, it's ridiculous. It takes them about like 2 days to issue a missing soldier letter for Gien. 2 days for a Beyond the Lookout, a bolo for her. I'm reading a little bit of the timeline here. From what they're saying is they interviewed hundreds of people, like all the people that seen her last. We get some of her friends here on the documentary, two of her friends talking about what they feel was her state of mind at the time, talking about her feeling uncomfortable at the time of her disappearance, how they felt. We even got in this documentary, the family, Myra specifically, talking about how they were there when they interviewed some of the last people to see her. And eventually they said there was a man there who kind of looked at them and laughed in their face and then left. Come to find out, it was Robinson, who we know ends up being the murderer. That was a very interesting story. I had not heard that piece before. One of the biggest things, too, that's introduced by the family, the family's basically being stonewalled. Fort Hood, they're saying they're conducting their investigation, but they're not keeping the family in the loop. So the family starts to protest. Like, they are protesting outside of Fort Hood. They're like, we want justice for Vanessa. They have her pictures plastered everywhere. Then the family tells, goes on social media and says, Vanessa told her mom before she disappeared that she was being sexually harassed on duty at work. And we get her friends, her coworkers backing her up. Lupe posts that on social media, and then the hashtag I am Vanessa Guillen explodes because the sexual harassment and sexual assault numbers for the military is almost twice as in civilian life. And a lot of military women, if you go on that hashtag right now, you will see the stories of so many women talking about how they were raped or sexually assaulted or sexually harassed on duty. And it is such a powerful moment here in the documentary. What did we think about the family getting the word out, really like putting pressure to the Fort Hood officials? Ariel?
Yeah, I'm remembering now, it's her older sister, right, who has that moment of, mm-hmm. okay, am I going to tweet this out? Like, is this, mm-hmm. oh, because okay. I can't even imagine because at that point, to your point, Mari, she's being stonewalled. They know it, right? They can feel it. She's been on the campus, but on the site at the fort. And I can't imagine what it feels like to kind of feel like you're taking on the entire military establishment, right? You're like, you want to shed light mm-hmm. on this thing, and it's only because they're not cooperating. Like, do you, whatever you want to continue to do on that land is none of my business, but it's my sister, so it is my business. And that, I just remember that moment of her saying, screw it, I'm just gonna tweet it out, and understanding the enormity of that moment. And then, you know, luckily the internet did something good and for once, and it exploded, like you said.
I thought it was like a super powerful moment because I don't think Vanessa was the first one that this happened to, right? And so mm-hmm. like generations before that might not have, like, this is a definite Gen Z response. Like, this is a, let's get on the internet, tell the truth. I don't, you know, I'm going to take down the institutions that aren't serving us anymore, this type of thing. And so it just, not only was she serving Vanessa with this act and all of the women who are still here, who have unfortunately gone through sexual harassment or sexual assault through in the safety of the military, it's all of the people who have it, who were before her that mm-hmm. didn't have that option. And so she didn't, you know what she was going to do. And to hear Myra at the end of this say that she hopes to run for office one day, I was like, yes. Yeah, this is what we awesome. Need. Like, this is what, and, you know, and she knew, like you were saying, Ariel, like, she knew what she was doing. She knew what was going to happen, and she went through mm-hmm. with it. And that, because she loves her sister, and that determination and love just shone through with, and nothing would have happened in this case if they didn't do it. Like,
yep.
They had exactly. no choice.
This came up last week when we discussed the Charlie Cullen case. It came up when we discussed the Boy Scouts with Leave No Trace, mm-hmm. the Catholic Church, healthcare, the police. when organizations investigate themselves, nothing good can happen. So exactly. The sexual harassment and sexual assault is, if you were a soldier who is a victim of any of these, male or female, you report it up the chain of command. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is the people up the chain of command that are the perpetrators.
Yes.
But also the army has a fantastic phrase, which is no credible evidence. I'm not saying you're lying. I just cannot find any credible evidence, because it is the person in the chain of command, either themselves or someone underneath them is the perpetrator. It is bad for the reputation of the military for this to come out, as it's bad for the reputation of the Catholic Church for priests to be outed, as it was bad for the Boy Scouts, for Boy Scouts leaders to be outed, as it's bad for the healthcare system, for the administration of hospitals to be outed. And therefore, this idea of a cover-up, and we talked about in Vatican Girl, does the truth always come out? It does on an individual level. And on an organizational level, it is suppressed until there is this huge groundswell. And in this case, it was, I am Vanessa Guillen. And person after person, mostly women, some men, identified themselves, stepped forward, because she, Vanessa, and her family opened that door, shed the light, and it was the individuals that came forward. It's incredibly powerful. And Gloria does say, I mean, obviously she'd rather have a live child, but she does say God lent Vanessa to me briefly, and this is what she came for, which as an atheist, for a moment, I believed in God and I was weeping.
I just was going to say, if you're looking for an example of what it's like to be in military court, The Good Wife and The Good Fight do a fantastic job at showing what this is like. So if you're interested in that, I just recommend taking a walk down that road.
100% agree.
Wow. Yeah. It's really tough. It's really tough because if it wasn't for the family, like shining a light on this, this would have been swept under the rug, just like a lot of the murders and missing at Fort Hood. One of the things that this documentary didn't go into that I think the 2021 did is like they actually found another body looking for Vanessa's.
Yeah, this is Gregory Morales. Wow. His body was found during the search for Vanessa. He'd been missing for almost a year. He had been murdered, but the army immediately labeled him as a deserter.
I just got to say, the place is called Fort Hood. They're covering up something. Like, come on. Like, I don't understand how it can't be more clear than this.
That's like, that lends such incredible credence to like the saying of like, you know, you're going to run it. They throw a stone and you're bound to hit like something. Terribly morose and disgusting. Like you would accidentally discover another body while looking for a body. It's unthinkable.
But it's the idea that the military, just as soon as someone disappears, that they label them absent without leave, AWOL, or in this case of Private Gregory Morales, that he is a deserter, which means there's no benefits to his family. He's dishonored. His rank is taken away from him. That's all been returned now, but they haven't solved his case. So it's just... It's horrifying. Ariel, beep, 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 beep. You have some breaking news.
Breaking news.
Oh, my God. So I just saw that Elizabeth was sentenced. I'm shocked, honestly, at the amount. But I see 11 years and 3 months in prison. And, you know, there's I think it's still early. So there might be appeals and there might be, you know, some kind of parole and, you know, all the little nuanced things that make it a lot easier for white collar criminals. But as far as I'm concerned, that's a lot higher than I was expecting.
Yeah. In prison is also key in the sentence because she was wanting to do some stuff.
Yes. House arrest. Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. 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 And remember, she was sentenced for defrauding investors, not for like their erroneous results or lying to the patients or stealing the customer's money. Basically, it's just the investors. So. But yeah, that's very interesting. We'll follow up on that. Back to Vanessa.
I'd be really interested in how many people are deemed AWOL are white versus non-white, because it's just like, you other crime people, you want to look that up. I would be surprised if I'm wrong in that situation.
And the documentary, I agree, Marissa, I would love to see those stats, because the documentary kind of opens with all of the bad statistics from Fort Hood. Like, there's been 2 mass shootings on that base. 28 soldiers died in a single year, like we said at the beginning. Like, it is clearly bad culture. So one of the things I talked to my dad about, he was a former first sergeant in the Air Force. So it was his job to be in the chain of, he was part of the chain of command for Air Force. He oversaw like a platoon of soldiers, and if something happened, they would report to him. And so once I watched this, he was one of the first people I contacted. I said, what do you think about this? What do you think about this bill? What do you think? And he, of course, he did 20 some odd years in the military. He says he thinks that the system doesn't work because the people who run it are corrupt. You know what I'm saying? He still is a firm believer that if it's done correctly, like, there's a chain of command, but he was telling me that there's always should be an inspector general. An inspector general is not a part of the chain of command. They report directly to Washington. They're the ones who decide if somebody should be charged or whatever. There is that type of third party. It is up to them, though, to not be corrupt as well. And he said, and that's the problem. He said, it sounds like with Fort Hood, they have a culture problem there, that it's clearly ingrained in the culture at that military base. That people can do these type of things and get away with it. Even in the beginning, they also showed like a sergeant or a high ranking officer was running a prostitution ring. He would solicit female soldiers.
He was the sexual assault counselor.
Conveniently.
Yeah.
And then he was coercing female soldiers to like prostitute themselves to other soldiers. It's like, that is ridiculous. Ridiculous. So it's like, clear them all out. And luckily by the end, they did say that about 14, they, after their investigation, about 14 different officers were either fired or suspended. Any other thoughts on just the bad reputation of Fort Hood before we move on?
I mean, it's, you know, I understand that it's people, and for the most part, I want to believe that it's people just trying to do their best. But like, as you were talking about it, Mari, it's, you can't have a system or a culture that is corrupt, or people who work in the system that's corrupt, and then also have the system working against the people that it's supposed to be protecting. Like, exactly. And then here, the idea that towards the end, they're trying to get this bill passed. And of course, the talking heads and some of the congressmen are like, no, but then you're kind of changing the power dynamic in the thing. Well, that's good. I understand the idea that these things are based in history, and that historically, when there were wars going on, I think they did a pretty good job in the documentary of explaining this, of like the origins of the culture, because that part kind of makes sense to me. But this is not like, Fort Hood is ostensibly a small city that is not at war. People live there full time. The rules have to be different, or you have to allow the rules to be different in the face, especially of these statistics. I can understand on paper, okay, the commanding officer, blah, blah, blah. But how can you look at these statistics and say there's no real problem and no change is necessary? It's crazy.
People make institutions. And if you look at who makes and made that institution, you can understand why the people who get away with things are the people that get away with things, I think, is what I'm trying to say. Is like, it's serving a very specific population. And the only military, very light experience that I have is marching band. Okay. So like there's like a hierarchy. You're all trying to do a main goal. You're trying to do that. But that, like, to Ariel's point, is on the field. Like, when you're on the field, you're listening to someone, you're doing those things in the locker, like, in the band room, nobody, like, there's not this pull of power around things. And so I think the time has come for there to be just a rethinking of how we run the military. And I'm sure other countries have like figured it out. I'm sure there are, you know, other countries that have like at least thought about the question or like tried something new, had a hybrid model, something
I
like
think
that.
Other countries just don't have such a large military.
Yeah, I mean, we do, you know, we are the modern empire, but you know, we could have like, you know, I don't know, like a South by Southwest for the military where we talk about how to do things differently. I don't know.
My dad was telling me like there are like steps and protocols that you are supposed to have to follow as soon as you get somebody reporting like domestic violence, sexual assault. Like, you know, I can't say all the things that I remember. I was with him when he was a first sergeant. I remember hearing stories and stuff like he would tell me. And it's like, he would say there are rules. Like you, if you get a formal request, the main thing you could do is separate, you know, it's separate the two parties involved, you know, and there's punitive punishment. And then there's judicial punishment. And there's things you can do that if say you don't want to take you don't want to court martial the soldier, then you can like strip the rank, do stuff like that. It seems like they didn't want to do anything. In not only Vanessa's case, but in a lot of cases here. Okay, so once they, like, we're kind of jumping all around here, but once they solved her murder, the documentary points out that the Army really is trying to disassociate sexual assault from her murder. It's a very concerted effort, and the family feels like it's because that they basically don't want the light shown on their poor handling of victims who report sexual harassment, sexual assault, rape. And that's why the family says they want to know why. Their main thing is they wanted to know why. Unfortunately, Aaron Robinson escaped police custody, military police custody, and completed suicide. And so because of that, they don't know why his girlfriend, Cicely Aguilar, you know, she says it's because he didn't want to be reported for fraternization with her, like with Cicely. But they're saying that there's no credible evidence to link that. What we all think, or what Vanessa's family think, is that Robinson was probably sexually harassing her in the middle of sexually assaulting her when she was murdered. But that is like, that seems to be the one thing they are really, really trying to divorce from all of this. So just to wrap this up, the documentary itself truly goes into the families. Like, they're flying back and forth between Texas and DC. They're trying to get this bill passed in the House. And eventually there's a Senate bill that's almost the same. It's supposed to be the largest military reform bill. I mean, we see it like a year or so pass. Like we see them meeting with Trump. Then the bill just never comes to the floor to be voted on. I wonder why. And then once the Biden administration takes over, they combine their bill with the Senate bill in some way. I don't know. Politics is still a little bit over my head.
Yeah, I wonder if that's on purpose, Mari.
People make institutions. Right.
Exactly. You know, don't get me to lying. Like, I you know, I'm only a bill. I don't know. That's the extent of my knowledge here. Basically, we do get our military reform bill that passes the Senate. Now, go back and watch the show, because they break down what's in it. Again, I'm like, unless you know, like
the main goal of the bill was to deal with this chain of command issue, right? It was to take if there is an allegation of sexual assault or sexual harassment, to have that be independently investigated outside of the chain of command. And I think where the difference between the two bills is, like, one bill, the one that was left behind, was like, and also run the trial, like, and all, like, take it completely, the entire investigation out. And the one that got passed was, okay, we'll just have this inspector general that can say whether this person can be prosecuted or not, be independent and not in the chain of command. And that's why you'll see in the documentary, like Senator Gillibrand, she's like, talks to them and is like, hey, like, this is my bill. But she ends up voting against it because it doesn't go far enough in her eyes. Mm-hmm. So there's still some work to do on the legislative front there. But that was my understanding of the rundown. Yes, former West Wing head.
There you go.
While I was watching it, I understood it, but I couldn't tell you what happened.
Exactly.
So the documentary does a very good job of giving mm-hmm. you just enough detail, but not bogging you down. And you certainly feel the weight of that 2 years of going backwards and forwards to Washington, the disappointment of the bill not even going to the floor under Trump. He couldn't have looked more bored when he was meeting those women. That's another story. I mean, hardly needs to be said.
Right.
then the combined bill, the watered down bill, as far as Gillibrand's concerned, goes through the House, passes the Senate 89-10, which is pretty decisive, and we see Biden signing it into law. So there is a reform there, and I think the idea is now more reforms need to be added on top. Gillibrand wanted it all to happen at once, and I understand that because it was really her flagship. She'd been working for 10 years on the bill, so it's a real legacy for her, and she wanted it to be more complete, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because there's the idea of, yes, there's an some kind of, you know, independent inspector that makes a decision as to whether a crime was committed or whether there was a wrong, but then still the military has a lot of say as to how they are. And this is, unfortunately, this isn't just in the military. There are a lot of police groups, like, police departments, excuse me, where it's very similar, where there's like an independent contractor, but then, okay, but they don't have complete oversight. And that's like the gaping hole in the middle of it and yes, it is progress, to be clear. And it is very important progress, but they still are trying to like kneecap some of the actual meat of the law of like, then this inspector actually being able to take action against the military. It's unfortunate.
Exactly. Like my dad, that's what my dad was saying. He's like, it's like the private sector. It's any entity that can police itself is gonna be rife with just corruption, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move to the updates to the crime and further properties. The Guillens filed a $35 million lawsuit against the Department of Defense for personal injury and wrongful death, which I hope they get every penny of that. Like, how did their loved one get murdered on base? She was murdered on base at her post. So we'll update you if we hear more about that. Cecily Aguilar, that is the girlfriend of Aaron Robinson, who helped dispose of Vanessa's body. Her trial date has been repeatedly delayed because this all happened again at the beginning of the pandemic. So her trial is being delayed, appeals, pandemic. She's pleading not guilty. She might be the only key to hopefully knowing what happened to Vanessa, but she's already changed her story multiple times. So we'll see what happens there. Further properties, like I said, the 2020 episode, season 43, episode 28, What Happened to Vanessa, is available on Hulu. It gives you another picture about what happened, like with the crime itself. It's a very good companion piece to this documentary. I kind of feel like this is that's the before, and this documentary, I Am Vanessa Guillen, is almost like the after, because again, this documentary really does focus mostly on her family's fight for justice, and we love that. Marissa, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate I Am Vanessa Guillen out of a possible 5?
Ooh. I'd give it, you can't break glass, right?
you can hear.
You might cut plastic off the handle. You
these days, off the handle. Yeah. These days, some of the magnifying glasses are plastic, I think.
Well, I would put it, pretty up there for someone, mm-hmm. who like, I love talking about crime, not necessarily seeing a lot of crime, like, this does a good job of empathizing with the effects of the crime and like, like with the family, like, and tells the family's story while also centering what happened to the victim. So I would give it like 4.5 magnifying glasses, in my opinion, because that's possible because of science.
Yes, of course. Ariel, what is your rating?
laser cutting, Marissa.
Yeah.
I would give it a 4 out of 5 magnifying glasses. I think the family stuff, like we said, is was super, super compelling. And I think it's good to make a good product even when it's something this sad and hard to watch at times.
Yeah, exactly.
Myra, 2035, whatever. Yeah.
Good call.
Yes, I love that. Sarah, how about you?
Well, hold on to your hats. I'm giving it a 5.
Oh, there we go.
I cannot fault it. I didn't really try. As I said before, the balance of totally centering the victim, but also lensing out to the larger issues, the societal issues, and respecting the family and making me care about a bill passing through a parliament, not my own. I cannot fault it. I'm going to give this a 5. What about you, Mari?
I'm going to agree with you, Sarah. I'm going to give it a five because I think thank you. It truly is on par with the Gabby Petito documentary, I think. First and foremost, centering the family. I also like that we got some talking heads here that, like I said, I did not initially know about. Like, we got the lawyer, Natalie, the family attorney. Oh my gosh, she was amazing. She, in this documentary, we saw her like fight for them with Fort Hood. We saw her help push their bill. We saw her be almost like a second mom to Myra. Like, she was amazing and astounding. And so I liked her. We also heard from Vanessa's fiance, Juan, who I think he's only had a few public speaking appearances, and I mean, soul crushing. Like, the family members truly, truly made this. Hearing from her friends, like we said earlier, I was just blown away by just, again, how like a well-rounded human they presented Vanessa to us. All of the murals, so many murals, yes, and vigils. Oh my gosh. I like, just beautiful. Stunning on how somebody can affect so many people, to see so many murals, to see how loved she is and what she represents. And again, bringing up Twitter and social media and how her story affected so many people. So it's just such a deep level of humanization that sometimes gets lost in true crime properties. So I'm going to give I Am Vanessa Guillen 5 out of 5. Whew, man, this was it's a hard one. It truly is a hard one in the beginning, but there is that little spark of hope at the end that, like they said, they want to make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else. You know, they want to magnify the voices of people who have been like sexually assaulted, like in military bases and stuff like that. Like, something, you feel like something is coming from this.
Well, and you believe them. Like,
yeah,
it's believable.
Yeah. They're doing everything they can to make sure that Vanessa didn't die in vain. And that is just, that's just something commendable. 'Cause I don't know if a lot of us could, I commend them for not just curling up into a ball, you know what I'm saying? Like, something probably I would have done. So it's just, this family is amazing. Their pain being made into reform is astounding to see in this type of medium. Marissa, what do you recommend for the listeners?
Well, listeners, if you know me or if you don't, I kind of like cults. Not like I want to be in one. I like to, like,
important distinction,
learn about them. So I've been keeping up with The Vow. Like, there's two parts to The Vow on HBO. There's part one, which I like watched in one sitting, and then part two just came out recently, and just keeping up with that story. It's about the Nexium cult, which, like, As with every cult, like there's some truth to like what they're selling there, but then there's also like a lot of bad. So that's on the true crime front. That's what I've been looking into. If you want to keep up with cults and play a video game, The Cult of the Lamb is also highly recommended. But it's not true crime. It's culty, sort of. That's what I got.
And Sarah, you have a listener recommendation?
Yes, I do. We have a listener recommendation from Jean. Thank you, Jean. After she watched last week's property, Capturing the Killer Nurse. So Jean wrote to us and said, thank you both for the excellent documentary recommendation this week. It was so good. I look forward to hearing your comments. Well, Jean, we hope you enjoyed them. A similar case that happened near me being Jean, was Elizabeth Vetlaufer in Woodstock, Canada. A quick 22-minute YouTube CBC program is, I'll put the link there in our show notes. She says, definitely more of a news story versus a full documentary. And then she's recommending a podcast, Case File, which I like very much too. She recommends episode 6, Roger Dean. Slightly different, but again, trust in healthcare professionals with tragic results. Don't not go to the doctor, everybody. This is me now, not Jean. Please trust your healthcare professionals.
Right.
Jean says, thanks again for the podcast every week. I always listen to it when it first comes out. Thanks, Jean. We love receiving listener recommendations.
Yes, we do.
And what about you, Mari? What have you got for us today?
Okay, so I have a really heavy recommendation here. It's a documentary, a feature documentary that I've been wanting to watch for a few years now. It's been sitting in my HBO Max list because I know I had to be in a certain headspace to watch it. And I think this was important. So it's called The Invisible War. It came out in 2012, directed by Kirby Dick. It is about sexual assault in the military. Literally, it is victims straight to camera talking about their rapes, sexual assaults, and violence against them in the military. It is heavy. So again, heavy trigger warning for rape and sexual assault, sexual violence. But like I watched it and I felt it like watching I Am Vanessa Guillen and then watching The Invisible War, you immediately understand why her story touched so many people. Because again, The Invisible War came out in 2012. The him recording them, I think he like recorded them over like a 3-year span. Like I think he started recording this documentary in I think 2009 or something like that. So a decade later, they're still dealing with the rampant sexual violence in the military against women. But also this documentary, The Invisible War, had male victims talking about what happened to them as well. And how the documentary talks about actually by sheer numbers, 1% of sexual assaults in the military are against men. But because of the sheer numbers, that's about 200,000 cases of male sexual assault, which is 10 times more than reported sexual assaults against women. But then you have to factor in that only 20% of sexual assault victims actually report. Oh, so like they think it's closer to about 16,000 actual like sexual assaults and rapes that happen in the military. And it's truly heavy. It's truly heavy. And from the moment it starts, like all these women, it starts with the women. They're talking about how, just like Vanessa, so many of them had dreams about going into the military. They wanted to serve in the military. They were drawn to the military. A lot of the women talk about why they wanted to go into the military and how patriotic it was. And if I hadn't known what the documentary was going to be about, I almost would have thought that they're trying to get me to enlist, because it was very like uplifting and inspiring. But then every single one of them almost has the same kind of story. Like they loved boot camp. They loved like their enlistment. And then the minute they get stationed somewhere, it goes from like them being with other women to them being the one woman in their whole entire squadron or platoon or whatever you want to say. And it was women from the Air Force, Army, Coast Guard, Navy. Like they had women and men from every single branch of government talking this camera, and every single one of them almost had the same thing about just coming out of base boot camp and basic training. They're at their squadron. One lady was talking about she got stationed out in Alaska in February. She was drugged and raped by April of that year. Like, it was, it's very hard. It's very hard to watch, but I think it's necessary. And I want it to change. Like, you want it to change. Like, it's still a decade going on from just that documentary, and we're still dealing with this. So the reforms that we talked about at the end of Vanessa Guillen, the documentary, and the reforms that were just signed within the past year, they're new, but hopefully they get the ball rolling and start implementing them so we can stop this rape culture that is infecting our U.S. military. At Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's at Crime SEEN RHAP, or email us by going to crimescenerhap@gmail.com. We also have a TikTok. You can follow us on TikTok at crime.scene. That's at crime.SEEN. Ariel, what do you have going on? Where can the people find you?
People can find me as of recording on Twitter. I don't know when this is what the right. Twitter situation will be like, but I'm on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am covering a couple of things over on Pusho Recaps, White Lotus season 2 with Dr. Amanda. Mm-hmm. That's super fun. I also cover movies with Grace every week. Oh, also covering, I forgot, the newest show. I'm a big fan of the Netflix series Dark. One of my all-time faves, and the same showrunners have just released a new show called 1899, and myself and Grace and DM Philly are covering that for Push Recaps as well. So look out for us there if you're interested.
Awesome. Marissa, what do you have going on, and where can the people find you?
I am also aboard the sinking ship that is known as Twitter. I was there like a year after it started. I'll be there till it dies. You can find me at Mars Bars, MARZBARS. Otherwise, you can hear from me on Pusho Recaps. I will be kicking off coverage of Wednesday, the Tim Burton series coming to Netflix with LaTanya Starks. That starts next week, so keep your ears out for that one. Otherwise, I'm on a patron podcast for Pusho Recaps as well called Mediapedia, where we just talk about questions and try to get them answered about media. So if that's something that you're into and haven't listened to, join us over there as a patron.
Where can the people find you, Sarah?
You can follow me at Sarah Carradine at mastodon.social or
that's
something.
That's the first Mastodon plug I heard.
Or at Sarah Carradine on Twitter. As of this recording, Twitter is still up. Just check.
Right.
So there you go. On the weekend, I dropped a special episode on the reality TV Rehab Ups feed, giving an overview of The Traitors Australia Season 1 with my special guest, Australian Ninja Warrior, Sean Bryan. And coming up, I'll be covering Welcome to Chippendales on Pusho Recaps. I said murder and strippers to Jason Reed. He said, I'm there. So we will be covering
sounds like him. Yeah,
episode by episode.
That's not what I heard. I heard he was like, huh?
Yes. So the first two episodes of the show will drop on Hulu on November 22nd, and then one a week after that. And look out for our recaps just after each episode drops. And what about you, Mari?
Of course, every week, me and Matt Scott bring you the highlights of the week in wrestling over on the Wrestling Rehab Up podcast, where, you know, we dive through the weird, wonderful, very wacky world of wrestling. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed in order to subscribe. Come listen to us. You don't even got to watch. You can just listen to us talk about wacky men in their underwear fighting each other with awesome guests. So definitely go do that. Me, LaTanya Starks, and Chappelle wrapped up our season 4 series finale coverage of Atlanta. on Post Show Recap. So you can go to postshowrecaps.com/Atlanta to hear our final thoughts on the final season of Atlanta. Even if you're still watching, you can always catch up and listen to us recap. We recap season 3 and season 4, so they'll always be there. Go watch Atlanta, then go listen to us. I am still currently on Twitter. It is still working for me. Again, if it goes down, I'm radio silent. Like my family won't come looking for me, but no. Go on Twitter. I'm at Mari Talks Too Much. That's at Mari Talks Too Much, 2 like the number 2 on Twitter. I'm running the Crime Scene Instagram, so go to Crime Scene Podcast on Instagram. You can see me there, I guess. Maybe if Twitter goes down, I'll actually update that thing. But other than that, Sarah, what do we have coming up for next week?
Well, next time on Crime Scene, we're watching Pepsi, Where's My Jet? With returning guest Ronald Young Jr. Now, last time we had Ronald on, we spoke in episode 24 about Leave No Trace, and we promised him something a little bit lighter for next time. So this is perfect. Watch it on Netflix and send us your comments and questions.
Thanks to Ariel F., Marissa Garza for joining us, Will from America for the theme music, Tricky Rice for the graphics, and Chelsea Lesser and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time,
case closed.